It's another edition of the Wenatchee Apple Sox podcast as we draw closer to the start of the 2024 season. Granted, still a few months to go, but it certainly feels like baseball is getting closer, and it really feels like that just at chatting with this guy again as Quincy Vassar joins us, the first of several players who are returning to the Apple Sox here this season. Quincy, how you doing? I know you're kind of in the midst of your college season, but probably like me, thinking a little bit about summer.
Yeah, this is about the time it starts to creep up on you. You get into season, and next thing you know, it's summertime back out there with the guys.
What's it been like getting back out there? You're at Vanguard. You know, you've been there. This is your third season there with the Lions. I imagine it's got to be kind of nice to be getting another season and just getting back into that swing of things.
Yeah, ball's been good for us down here. Surprisingly, it's been a little rainy, but we have a fun group of guys. Good team, chemistry strong, so I have a good feeling about this season.
I was going to say, you know, I think a lot of people, well, they get that feeling in late February, early March. They get that feeling of, okay, it's starting to warm up a little bit. You're in California, and you're mentioning the rain. I mean, I would imagine you're pretty spoiled with the weather you get there, even in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, coming from Bellevue, is like anything's better than, you know, Seattle area raining every day. So, I mean, I deal with it out here, but a lot of the California guys are spoiled year after year. They like to complain a little bit. I'm like, you guys don't even know what it's like up north. But it hasn't been that bad, and it's been sunny, you know, this California weather.
Not too bad. Big reason why you guys were able to start your season in late January. You got in your first game on the mound. I was looking at the schedule earlier. You were on the mound January 27th. Does it ever get weird pitching and playing baseball in games that actually matter in January?
Yeah, the first year I was down here was the biggest hit. It was like, holy smokes, we got a game already. And like January, you know, there's snow on the ground where I live. And I'm like trying to amp up and all these guys are ready to go. I was like, okay, I guess it's just how they do it down here. Throw straight through December and then kick off the season right away.
I would imagine as a player, though, you probably love that, though, because I always think of it myself. I mean, just when I went to college and I covered the baseball team, I remember thinking, boy, it can't be March, late February soon enough. Not too bad for you to just get it going in January instead.
No, it's perfect. And then the season ends and you roll right into summer on time. And it's honestly a perfect schedule down here.
And it works out really well. And that's what you're going to be doing for a third straight season here, joining the Apple Sox. You began in 2022, pitched briefly in the West Coast League with Bellingham in 2021. But the last three, that's going to be here, three summers now with the Apple Sox. What's it mean for you pitching for the Apple Sox? Because you're from Brewster. Like you said, you know, you're someone you get back home a lot. And, you know, it's nice to, I would imagine, probably pitch somewhere close to home.
Yeah, I mean, you already know the story. I think Mitch knows the story. Just as a kid, like playing for the Apple Sox was always like my big dream, you know. And it's just a highly enjoyable thing. And I know not a lot of guys who have played in the West Coast League get the opportunity to play for three seasons, nevertheless for the same team three seasons. So it's a blessing. That's how I view it. Grateful for it every summer. And it's one of my favorite things to do.
I think fans loved it when you came back last year. I would imagine now hearing you're going to be back for a third season, but I'm sure their first reaction is going to be excitement. The second one's going to be, wait a second, what year is he again now? How many years of eligibility has this guy got?
Yeah, mine and my roommates, we have to be like the last wave of this COVID eligibility, quote unquote, where most of us don't even know what grade we're in anymore. Like, we're just playing ball and enjoying it until they tell us we can't, I guess.
It was funny because I was looking, I remember last year I was putting together your bio for the website and everything, and it said you were a senior then. So I put that, and I'm looking at, I've got the media guide that I made for the Apple Sox, and I've got you in there as a senior. Well, here you are still going. So you're technically a grad student right now? Explain that to everyone.
Yeah. So fifth year in college. My freshman year when I had Tommy John surgery, I didn't take classes for a semester. So it allowed me this year to finish my bachelor's and then start on grad program stuff in the spring. And so I'm technically listed as a grad student, even though I just finished my undergrad. But a lot of the guys who are in their fifth year, we have more grad students on Vanguard. A lot of them were redshirt freshmen. And then they're actually in the grad program this year, or they're working on like a credential. Some of them are doing a teaching credential. So Especially down here in the GSAC, the Golden State Athletic Conference, all the teams have a lot of grad students. It's actually a very old conference. Our team this year had 18 junior college transfers, junior or above.
Wow.
So it's like a really big team, but it specifically a lot of older guys. We only have a handful of freshmen.
Okay. So that's kind of a lot of guys who are in a similar position as you then, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of like the last wave of just this crazy older generation of baseball players. But I honestly enjoy it. It makes for extremely good experience competition every weekend. It like kind of doesn't matter what team you're playing. When you pull up to the yard, it's a lot of guys who have a lot of games. They see the same things you do on the field, and it makes for really fun weekends.
I would imagine it's kind of nice to be, like you said, playing guys the same age. Because it would be one thing if, let's say, Vanguard was known for the older players and you had another team in your conference who was known for younger. That would be probably not as fun.
Yeah, and it's not like there aren't freshmen, but it kind of makes it more fun when there's only a handful of them and there's a bunch of older guys because, you know, they get to learn a lot. And, you know, they're just basically kids to some of us, but it's just fun having younger guys around, especially when there's a ton of older guys, because they get to hear a lot of different stories, a lot of experiences, and I think it helps them grow a lot.
Absolutely. And you've had a lot of experience yourself. We mentioned it started out at Bellevue, didn't pitch in 2020 because of the Tommy John surgery. Now, 2021, though, you technically could have gotten a waiver that year, couldn't you? Didn't the NWAC pretty much grant everyone the opportunity that year to not even count that year technically?
Yeah. So that year from junior college, everyone got a waiver as long as you didn't go NCAA.
Okay.
So they granted the 2020 season for NCAA, but not the 21. That's what kind of pushed a lot of us to NAI was they were giving both years back. So looking then, we're like, well, maybe we'll actually want that second year later on to play. So that's why Vanguard opened up and I was like, this could be good. It's a safe cushion in case you need the extra year, want to play the extra year, just to have it in the back pocket. And, so NAI is a little more open on the rules and the eligibility. And that's where you find a lot of these older guys. There's a lot of guys who bounce from NCAA and come play, NAI. And I honestly think the skill gap is pretty slept on when it comes to, up and down. There's like 350 NAI teams. There's a crazy number, and there a lot of them are really, really good ball clubs.
So that right now is your third year technically of eligibility because of that 21. So then next spring, that is it. Like the spring of 2025 is the end of college baseball for Quincy Vassar, correct?
Yeah.
Or to find another loophole in there.
I don't know. I don't know what it'll look like. Decisions yet to come. We'll see. We'll see after the summer. I'm not sure. I'll be graduated, so I don't know. I really don't know yet what's going to happen for next year.
So right now you're kind of saying you're going to wait and see after this season with the Apple Sox. You go from there, and then we see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see then. Yeah, after the summer. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that gives you a little extra oomph then for this summer to really go out knowing there is that possibility. It might be one of those last times, maybe competitively at the collegiate level, you toe the rubber.
For sure. And I'm starting to feel that a little more, kind of on the back end of the college journey. So, it feels the mindset for this summer is kind of just give it everything I have. And, I know that's how the Apple Sox works anyways. Every single day we go out, it's like, everyone's going to play hard. That's the culture Mitch has built. But it means a little more this summer for sure.
Let's talk about Mitch Darlington. He's the only coach you've known with the Apple Sox. I think any organization, you're thrilled and you're blessed when you have a coach who is around a team even 3 years. It's not always what happens. And, you know, things have obviously worked very well under Mitch. What do you like about playing for him? Because he seems like that, to me on the outside, not, you know, just from my observations, seems like the right mix of a player's coach who's also a guy that everyone really respects.
For sure. He has extremely good baseball knowledge. He was a player, which obviously helps a lot. And he's a younger guy, which makes him a little more relatable to a lot of, especially the older college guys. And he just rides for us every single day. You know, he's not a coach who asks for your best and doesn't give his best. He's given his best every single day, and you know what you're going to get from him. Another thing I enjoy about Mitch is, you know, everybody makes mistakes on the field. He'll be the first to own up to any mistake he makes, whether it's waving a guy around third, you know, and that's a completely respectable thing from a coach. I just his ethic when it comes to the Sox. A lot of guys view summer as, you know, just a time to get reps in or time to just play a couple extra games. Like, to him, winning is everything in Wenatchee, and I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the way I want to play the game. That's the way he plays the game, coaches the game, and we see eye to eye on that. So he's super enjoyable to play for.
I remember him a couple of years ago. I heard from either it was him or a couple of other guys. I remember in 2022, he ended up giving the team kind of a speech about that after a tough loss and just kind of a middling stretch. Do you remember that? I remember him, or it was, again, someone was telling me that he had kind of said that he was telling you guys just about how much the Apple Sox meant, how much summer ball really meant.
Yeah, I remember it specifically. We lost six straight to Bellingham my first summer there, and we knew that that team was not good enough to take six in a row, 6 days in a row. That was probably one of the toughest weeks of baseball I've played, and for sure in his young coaching career, it had to be pretty tough. And he gave that speech, and, I mean, you know what happened. We kind of turned it on in the back half, but I could tell some of the guys might not have seemed like it was a big deal to me. Like, that's a devastation to roll out to a team you actually think you're better than and get beat six times. It hurt pretty bad. And to him, you know, he was speaking from the heart, and it really does mean everything in Wenatchee and to him. So, you know, we turned it on pretty good and made a deep run after that, and I was happy to see that.
That was such a fun second half that team put together. And let's dive into that. We'll talk about the 2023 team in a moment, but let's go back to that 2022 season. It was a slow start to the year, but, you know, for you, and you and I have talked about this before, you got that first outing June 3rd in relief. I remember that crazy, crazy game with Ben where you were on the mound when the light went out, of course. You've given me this story before. Give it to anyone who's listening who hasn't heard, because that was a game, seventh inning, you're on the bump, we're in the lead, you know, getting ready to deliver pitch, lights go completely out.
Yeah. I kind of felt like I was hitting stride in the game, like we were picking up some momentum. It had been pouring, and, you know, there was, like, some delays, whatnot, anyways. And I was actually, like, taking a step in the windup, and the lights went off, and I was like, okay, what's going on? And so we went into the warehouse because – started raining again, and then they were like, we're gonna have to finish the game tomorrow. And we were short on pitching because it was the beginning of the year. I think we had eight arms for that three game set. So I told Mitch, I was like, I'll go again tomorrow. Like, I, you know, I only threw a couple innings, be fine to go again. It was just a weird baseball thing that just doesn't happen in any other sport. It's like something you just don't see.
Yeah, I was looking back at it, I was just looking back at the recap. I remember I'd written then. You had gone an inning and two-thirds of scoreless relief, four strikeouts, then there's the stoppage. Then that's not even the weirdest part of it to me. That's a weird part of the story. The craziest thing that I don't think, you know, you'll see too often was you went out the next day and were the first guy on the mound when the game resumed. Every time in baseball, when there's a rain delay, when there's a stoppage, when there's a power outage, someone else comes in to pitch whenever the game's resumed. For me, I didn't have to put in a new pitcher for the Apple Sox in my scorecard. Yeah. Was that something you kind of fought for with Mitch, being like, hey, you know what? I was okay. It was only an inning and two-thirds last night.
It's not something you see from a lot of guys. But that year at Vanguard, actually, it was a unique role I kind of had. I threw twice every weekend. I threw Friday, Saturday, almost every single series. And we played four game sets that year in the GSAC, and I'd sometimes pitch in three of the four games. And so the Friday, Saturday thing I was used to, and I was like, hey man, like, I can do this. This is not hard for me. I know this probably isn't what you want. You know, your first year might be a bad look for you, but this is what I've been doing all year and I'm prepared for it. And, you know, he trusted me on that, which was, you know, I respected that too.
Yeah. It worked out well, obviously. You know, you got out there, you got that out of that inning, and then, obviously, we don't even need to talk about the ninth. We just couldn't get any outs of that. I just remember Mitch telling me after when we went back to the hotel, he was like, all the guys were going, oh, okay, we're 1-0. You know, we're probably gonna call this one. Do you remember the discussion on the field that night? Was there any talk like, okay, they're gonna call this one? It's late. It's an official game technically, or was Ben kind of fighting that whole night? Like, hey, we're gonna resume this game. We're gonna try to see what we can do.
No, that was the thing. I think most of us as players, we kind of didn't know what was going to happen because we all thought, you know, we played enough innings for it to be booked as an official game. And then, like later that night, Mitch texted our team chat and was like, "We're going to resume this tomorrow," you know. And so then at the hotel is when we were talking about, all right, they want to play, they want to keep going. Like I'll take the ball again, and then we'll just do
Yeah.
it, and we'll play them, and we'll get out of there. So it's
If there
just.
was ever a game that was proof we needed a pitch clock, though, I think it was that one. Because I
Like
was looking
4 or 5 hours, I was like,
oh my gosh, I was looking back at it. That was a 6:35 first pitch. And I'm looking at my recap I put from that night. It was at 10:20 at night when the lights
yeah.
went out. And at the time, it was, and again, the game was still going on. Not only was it only going on, we were in the bottom of the seventh inning.
Yeah.
24 combined runs between the two teams.
That's what I was gonna say. It doesn't help that there was more frames with multiple runs scored than zeros on the board. So it was just back and forth and back and forth.
That was such a crazy one because I'm looking back at it now too, because I can understand why Ben would have wanted to play that, because at the time they were leading 10-5 after three innings. We get three in
Yeah.
the fourth, they get one in the sixth, but we had four in the seventh to take the lead. So it's like they're probably thinking, wait a second, we just need another half inning. And evidently, that's what happened in the ninth inning. So,
Feeling like a basketball game, just back and forth.
and then the next day wasn't much better, too. I mean, it's
No.
just that was such a weird weekend. Was that one of the stranger baseball games, all told, taking 2 days, lasting as long as it did, that you can really remember?
Yeah. I mean, like right away, I was like, is this how it's going to be all summer? Like 12, 11 in the seventh or whatever? Just long games, you know? You don't know how to feel about
I just remember, well, that whole
it.
weekend was like the weekend from hell, let's be honest. The next day we get
Oh, yeah.
bludgeoned, and then day three on a travel day with the home opener the next day, we get walked off in extra innings with a rain delay in there. I just
Yeah.
remember I was like trying to talk Mitch down the whole weekend. I was like, Mitch, this is like the most crazy. And I was like, at the time, it was my fourth year in the league. And I was like, Mitch, I've never seen anything like this. Like, this is not
Yeah.
normal. Like, I hope you're not thinking like this is some JV operation.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the club, man. Welcome to your first year of coaching right away. Just get something that guys who have coached 30 years have never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
Four game stretch where it's like four crazy things that happen. And I just remember like some of the guys are like, what is going on? I'm like, it's a long season, fellas, you know, and baseball just got to kick, you know, just got to bounce back.
The best thing that happened was that we went out and we won the home opener on that Monday. But I remember Mitch telling me, he was like, yeah, I talked to Marina and I was like, I don't know if this is the right thing. Thank goodness things turned around, fortunately. But that season had some stories in it. And I mean, that was the kind of year where I remember thinking like, boy, if we win a title this year, we are going to have some stories to tell. And even though we didn't, there was still a lot of fun moments from that summer. You got your first start of the season the day after that home opener. I remember the story was Mitch was kind of looking for a starter, and you kind of came up as an option. I think you kind of made yourself an option, correct?
Yeah, I knew, like, again, we were short on arms. All the guys hadn't got there yet. We were waiting on guys like Moffitt and a couple other arms to get there that were notable starters. Like, when they come, they were going to be starters. And I have started a lot of games in the past and relieved, you know, I basically have pitched in a lot of situations. I just told Mitch, like, I can do this again, same situation. Like, I can start for you, you know, I can give you whatever you need. He's like, all right. And I kind of knew in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, you have a good outing, maybe he'll give it to you again. And from there, you know, it's just kind of how it went the whole summer.
Six scoreless innings, four hits, two walks, eight strikeouts, no runs. I've seen a lot of great outings from you the last two seasons. That's the one to me that I felt like you were your most unhittable, where there wasn't a whole lot that they were touching. It's a lot was going right. Were you really amped up to be making that first start in front of, family and friends back at home for a team you've always wanted to pitch for?
Absolutely. Pitching at home is an incredible feeling in Wenatchee. And again, mixed with the feeling, you know, like Mitch trusted you. You better at least you know, help the team win the game. So it amped me up a little bit more. And my parents don't get to come down and watch very many games, and they were at that one. So there were some combined feelings, just a lot of things adding up to a good outing there.
That was a fun game because that was one where we ended up, I mean, we had to score 5 runs in the seventh just to score the only runs of the game. That was a scoreless game going into the bottom of the seventh. Bats busted out, story of the season. In a lot of ways in 2022, the bats coming through. But that was a great night on the mound. I mean, you had 6 scoreless, you mentioned the 8 punchouts, but then Connor Ashworth came in, and that was the most impressive relief outing I can remember. Not in terms of the length, the three innings, but striking out each of the final 8 hitters in order. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, we played together in high school, which was pretty cool too. And he was pretty electric then, but I've kind of never seen it like that. He basically missed barrel for 3 straight innings and nobody could hit whatever he was throwing. It was so fun to watch after that. It was that was a gift for sure.
How cool was that, getting to do that with, you know, a lifelong friend, lifelong teammate, getting to do that with another team, same colors. It was kind of fitting. You guys were wearing the red jerseys that night, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a great feeling. And there was another Brewster boy there too. Corey was in the outfield.
That's right.
And he's watched us play. I mean, the three of us have played a couple hundred games together. And he was like, I've never seen either of you do something like that combined in the same game. So that was pretty funny to hear too.
That was so cool. After that, you had a weird stretch in that season. I remember where you had a couple of losses, just a couple of games where you gave a lot of, you know, depth as a starter before you kind of hit a tough patch. That game against Kelowna, June 29th, where you got out of the first inning, but that was it. You certainly bounced back, though, in the next game. 7 scoreless against Nanaimo on July 8th, 2022. That was kind of a chippy weekend, I remember, going back to that, going to Nanaimo. There was a lot of energy there. But those were 3 really impressive wins for that club because you remember you won the game on that Friday. Saturday got rained out, and then we got the doubleheader the next day. And as I always like to say, Mitch Darlington doesn't lose games in doubleheaders, and he still hasn't as Apple Sox head coach. No.
Mitch knows how the JUCO seasons go, play everything in two. A split feels like a loss in JUCO. You go out to win both games and it feels a lot better after that. The best thing about playing doubleheaders, rainouts in the summer is just making sure the guys are up on energy because you know the other team might not be prepared to play 2 full games in one day. And the team with the most energy in the second game usually comes out with the win. And we kept the energy the whole time. It helps having a guy like Canfield in the dugout just yelling and screaming all the time. So that's nice.
And we'll definitely talk plenty about Canny in a little bit. That was he's become a popular question for most people on the podcast this offseason. Anyone who knows him would understand.
Yeah.
But that was another one of those crazy road trips. Getaway day, doubleheader. I just remember on the way back, and that was such a late night. I remember getting back, and when we stopped at the border, I'll never forget when Joichiro Oyama he was going up to do his picture. They told him to stand there. He goes up and smiles, puts a thumb up, and the guy's like, no, you don't need to smile.
No. I want to tell the guy, I'm like, no, he's just a happy person. Like, he doesn't mean anything by it. But, I mean, do you ever remember a time when the guy wasn't smiling,
in all honesty?
Even for a Border Patrol picture?
I don't even remember him being angry that summer. I remember one time, and I'll never forget it, when he swung and missed on a pitch, just the way he kind of like tilted his head, like he was so like displeased at himself.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's all right, buddy. You know, like you'll get on the next time.
I live in a house down here. Corey, Jacob Dahlstrom, and Fred, all guys that would play for the Sox.
Yeah.
And we have agreed. Joe has come over because he doesn't actually live that far. We've all agreed that's one of the best teammates we've ever played with, ever hung out with. All around baller, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Rides for the team, 5-tool guy. You know, the attitude he carried, I think, helped build the culture that first year. Highly enjoyable dude to share the field with every single day. Super important to have around.
Oh, yeah. And he was such a key piece on that team, start to finish. You don't always see those guys, and very deserving co-MVP that season. Let's talk about the home stretch of that 2022 season for you. You kind of hit your groove late in the year, and that all culminated in the postseason start. August 10th, 2022, game two of the division series against Kamloops. Win, you move on, lose, and we play game three. And I remember that first inning was a little tough. Kamloops got on the board. Again, they're playing for their season. They score once in the top of the first, but the bats kind of picked it up from there, and then you really hit your groove.
For sure.
What do you remember from that game? Because that was a – for me, it was fun because, yeah, you know, we went out, we took care of business, we clinched the series. But my goodness, I mean, that game was over fairly quickly.
Yeah. I knew how hot the bats had gotten. So when they kind of jumped on me a little early, I was more thinking, we're going to hit, right? You just got to keep them at bay. It's not a mindset of having to just, you know, shut out every team. It's like the boys have got you in the field. Calm the nerves a little bit. And the majority of time I do have a shaky start. It's always the first or the second inning when I give up a few, which I honestly think is better than late game because you leave the fellas a lot of frames to score, and it's exactly what they did. So it's always helpful when we just have a loaded lineup behind you.
And that's exactly what happened. Four runs came in the bottom of the first inning, and of course, kind of started with Joe leading it off with a single, and then he went from there. And again, from there, you guys pretty much rolled. Seven from you, two runs, one earned, one walk, eight strikeouts and six hits, and moved on to the championship game in the division against Bellingham. That one stung. That was such a great ball game. That was one of my favorite games. I remember just watching as a fan, as a broadcaster from afar. Boy, that one had a lot of chances, and he just couldn't quite get that one, though, in 2022.
Yeah. It's always tough playing at their park. They're a very good club year in and year out. You know how the league fluctuates with teams getting better and worse. You kind of don't know what to expect in some years, but Bellingham always shows up, and they always play tough. When it's just one game, you kind of never know what's going to happen. It's baseball. They played us really, really well. I thought we actually played a pretty decent game. Obviously, we could have done some stuff better, but it's always good time when the Apple Sox meet the Bells.
Which unfortunately didn't happen in 2022, but like we said, such a great game. And I like that you brought that up because I kind of do the same thing. When I see the schedule each year, honestly, Quincy, the first thing I do is I go, where's Victoria and Bellingham? Because those are the guys, if we want to win a title, we got to go through them. And I hope they look at us the same way.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Where's Victoria? Where's Bellingham?
Yeah,
line it up.
Absolutely. I mean, every time we play those guys, it feels like a playoff game. I mean, you remember that 2022, and then last year we actually did play them in the playoffs. I mean, it's got to be fun having a team like that again for summer baseball, who you kind of know. Hey, we kind of have a rivalry with these guys.
What I really enjoy about it is like. The way it's explained to the guys who are first-year Apple Sox guys, you basically tell them, like, you know, this is for real. When we go play these guys, there's no joking around. We want to beat these guys every time. Not that we don't want to beat every other team, but going into Victoria or going into Bellingham, it feels a little different. And, you know, their fan bases pull a lot more than most other parks, and that just makes it feel more like a playoff atmosphere. And it's kind of electric, and it's really fun.
Well, let's move into the 2023 season. This past summer with the team, your second, unlike 2022, all nine games, well, I guess you pitched in 10 with the postseason, but all nine games that you pitched in 2023 were starts. How cool was that coming back to the Apple Sox and being the starter right away? Because like we had mentioned before, you had to earn that the season before.
Yeah. I felt like there were some things I could do better, but it was also nice to know beforehand kind of what day you're getting in. There's no uncertainty behind, you know, need to be ready for this day, you know, it's kind of preset at the beginning of the week. The league, again, I thought was really good. And, we had a great team. We had a lot of awesome guys. One of my favorite things is meeting all the first year Sox that come in, most of them out of state. We had a lot of young guys, which is fun. But yeah, it is fun being a starter and I just enjoy that for sure.
The 2023 team was 20 games above 500. Every time I say that, I still can't believe it. The 2022
That's a lot of games.
Oh yeah. The 2022 team was a 500 team. That's just in terms of the regular season. What was the biggest change from one season to the next?
I just the first season, it took a little bit to kind of figure out kind of what the culture was going to be. And then obviously we started rolling after that. And from there on, I think it just carried straight into that second summer. We were just dialed in more from the start. Obviously we did drop the first series to Springfield, but we kind of knew the benchmark where we needed it to be to win games. We knew what the league looked like. And it was just exciting high level baseball all summer. The first year, it took the first half of the season to kind of gain some chemistry and figure out who we were. I thought our team the first year honestly was just as good as the second year. We had a lot of great players. It just took a little bit.
Did it help having so many returning players in a sense? I mean, both pitchers and position players. I mean, I imagine that would really help to lay a foundation.
100%. When, you know, day one, you pull up and see Ponce and Canfield and all the guys, it was like, oh, this is going to be a fun summer. We got, you know, a bunch of our favorite guys back hanging out. It's just a lot more fun with guys, you know, and then you can mix in guys that are new. And when baseball is fun, it becomes a lot easier to win games. I've felt that at school ball in the summer. It's like, when you're having fun, the team usually is playing well.
And it certainly led to that. Like we talked about, we were so close to winning that first half. I mean, that's a weekend where you hate to, I mean, it was an incredible first half looking back at 19-8. That is the Apple Sox record for the best ever performance in any half since the two half format began. But it's hard to not look back at it as what could have been because of dropping 2-3 to Port Angeles, because it was one of those things. I remember at the time being like, boy, you look at historically to win in this league, you kind of have to win one of the halves. And we had our work cut out. And it's like, boy, I felt like we were so much better than the year before, but now we've got to go out and try to win the second half. So take me through that, because you pitched in one of those games. We were so close. And we won the first one pretty handily, July 4th. July 5th was the one. You got off to a tough start. You really bounced back from there. Like you said before, if you have a tough inning, it's usually that first one. You really got on a roll after that. Just remind, like, what was your feelings at the end of that series when it's, okay, we're heading back home. We didn't get it done in the first half.
Yeah. It was kind of a little devastation. You know, we really wanted to win that first half, and we knew we were a better team than Port Angeles, but that's just baseball. You lose 2-3 sometimes, and you have a whole another half of the season to play. You kind of just, you know, sleep it off one night and get back to work the next day is kind of how I felt about it. It's just how the cards were played. It's just kind of how it rolled out. And from there, to me, I just – complete 360 turn, and we got to focus on the second half of the season. And I try, you know, the guys, obviously that bus ride back wasn't the funnest. There wasn't a whole lot of chatter, but you just got to focus on the next game. You play so many games in a short period of time. You can't let, you know, 2 out of 3 series loss carry into the next weekend, because then it can happen again. It becomes a chain effect. That's what I figured out over the past few years about these summers. One bad game doesn't define the whole season. We learned that from the first season. Like I said, the 6th straight to Bellingham, that didn't define how the season ended up. Went on a tear after. Just baseball. It's game of runs. You know, you got to score. You got to win a bunch of games in a row, and it just didn't happen against Port Angeles.
I was so impressed this past season how good the North Division was. I think you can agree with that. I mean, you look back at 2022, 500 team. We won the second half. We had the best record in the division in the second half. We didn't get it on a tiebreaker. We didn't limp in. We were the best team. And even then, it was nowhere near what the 2023 team was. Again, I'll say it again, 37-17, and we didn't either half. We got in with a wild card, and we were on the road you know, for game two, and we would have been for three if we had gone that far. But it's so funny what a difference a year can make, Quincy. I really thought that last season, where I was like, I remember when we weren't officially eliminated from winning the second half on that the last day of the season, which was August 5th at Kelowna. But I remember thinking, really? Like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to finish probably 20 games above 500, and we're not going to win either half.
Yeah, The way I thought about it, because we talked about this last summer, but in college, you know, you play preseason games and conference games. It felt like every season was a conference game, just straight heated, high-level baseball. Obviously, 20 games over 500, we did well, but the energy was just there every single weekend and every single series, so it was really fun.
Let's talk about that game, that August 5th game against Kelowna. You got the start, and I remember thinking, this is perfect. Quincy's going to start. We're going to get, you know, six, maybe seven innings out of him. We're going to clinch the second half tonight. And we could have. I remember if we had won that game and Victoria had lost, we would have. It didn't happen. That was such a strange one because you gave, like we said, you gave the outing we needed in that one. You know, we scored enough runs. We're right in the middle of it, back and forth game. And I remember in extra innings, it just got away. It was, I think, the simplest way to put it. It was, we had a chance on the top of the 10th. We strand the bases loaded, get to the bottom half, lead off single, stolen base, single to put runners at first and third. And then, you know, right after that, you know, run able to score. It was just, that was so gutting because it was like, boy, we were, again, we were doing everything we had to do, but we have one bad weekend and it just happened to be the final weekend of one of the halves.
Yeah. Just, it felt kind of just like bad luck again. I think I remember leaving that game with like second and third, one out, you know, kind of a dicey situation to leave the next guy in, but it was just, it was another weird weekend. It was kind of smoky up there. I remember there was like a wildfire or something. So it kind of felt dark all day. Yeah, just another weird game.
What do you remember from the playoffs? It was a pretty quick series, obviously. Going to Victoria, we lost game one. That was a bad first inning was the game. You know, we had chances after that, but we couldn't recover from the first inning. Game two was such a great, you know, pitcher's battle. Everyone forgets. Victoria kind of blew it open late. They had one, I think it was a big sixth inning. And then before we knew it, summer was over.
Yeah. In my opinion, they're the best team in the league when they're playing at home. Their record last year showed for that. They're just so tough at home. I think we swept them second series of the year at our place, and they look like two different ball clubs. So you kind of gear up when you're going to Victoria knowing what you're going to get. Rowdy fans, rowdy team, big dugout, a lot of players on their roster. And they punch hard. They punch early. It's just tough to play there. It was a short series, but it was still, I had fun. You know, I think the boys had fun. It's not fun losing, but anytime you get to go play in Victoria, take a trip, be with the team in a playoff game, that's something to be grateful for.
The 2024 Wenatchee Apple Sox season begins on May 31st with a 6:35 p.m. game against the Port Angeles Lefties. Spend your summer soaking up the sun at the ballpark and watching some of the top college baseball players in the country. The season lasts until mid-August, and the Apple Sox are looking to make a third consecutive postseason appearance this season. Secure your tickets now by heading to applesox.com or by calling 509-665-6900. Wenatchee Apple Sox Baseball, celebrating summer one inning at a time. Well, Quincy, I figure you had to know this question was coming. Got to ask you about Evan Canfield. We've talked a lot about the memories from the last two seasons. A lot of people can remember these themselves. They can remember, you know, they can look at the box scores and see what happened. But the stuff they don't get to see or even witness is this stuff. The relationships of these guys you have as teammates, guys who you wouldn't have known unless you were playing summer ball together, which is the stuff I love this stuff. The guys who meet and, you know, you're completely from different areas. You know, you're both in-state guys. Tell me about your friendship with Evan Canfield these last two seasons, now going on three.
Man, this kid is just funny to be around in general. Whether we're playing a card game on a trip or just hanging out in the hotel room, all it takes is a look from this kid to make you laugh. In the dugout, I think there is nobody that can drive Mitch more up a wall than Evan Canfield just by saying like one word, which is also super funny. But at the same time, every time he hits a bump, it's electric. So there's two sides to him. Pretty lights out of the pen, but also just insanely funny to be around. He's a super good guy.
Most guys' favorite teammate from the last couple of seasons, pretty easily. Yep. My favorite thing with you two is most batting practices, Evan liked to hit bungos last year. And then you would typically be right there with him. You'd receive the ball coming back in. So we would always talk. I remember most games I'd come down and I'd talk to you guys. And the funny part that I always remember with it was most of it was you and I going, okay, yeah, where are we at in the standings? Who are we playing? Who do they play tonight? And then Evan being like, oh, they're right there. Like they're right next to us. It's like, yep, they're right by. Like it was like him forgetting, like, oh yeah, that's right. It's just
He's like, "All right, we're playing a baseball game, and we're in the West Coast League, and it's 7 o'clock. Just oblivious to what's going on, just hitting this fungo and hanging out and chirping the hitters."
oh
It's like,
yeah, oh yeah. Or he'd hit one too high to third. I remember it would sail over Ponce's head. Oh my bad,
my bad.
I'll get
Hey,
you
go get
next
that
time.
real quick.
But it was so funny. I remember you guys would even have debates. Remember, we were debating last year, oh, who's going to be the first pick in the MLB draft? Who they get? And I remember having those kind of discussions too. But he was that kind of guy. It didn't really matter what we did the night before. He was the same guy every day.
Oh, for sure. He has his stern opinions on things. Like, you probably remember that, talking about who's going to be the first pick, why not. But every day he showed up to the yard, same guy. Pretty fair-headed dude, just playing baseball. It's always good to have those guys around. Their emotions don't really run high, but you know what you're going to get every day you see him.
I'll never forget the one chirp he had though of you. I think we were on the bus. We were heading, oh, was it Nanaimo? I want to say. He was talking in reference to one of your recent games. It was the one against Port Angeles. I think you gave up the one home run, and he said something like, what did he say? He said, oh, did you guys see that? That ball hasn't landed yet. That's the one that Quincy gave up the other day.
He
He
was like,
always had a
man,
comeback for people.
the funny thing, that was a lefty on lefty situation. He goes, "I've never seen a ball hit off a left-handed pitcher that far." I was like, "Hey, at least you waited 20 minutes until I came out of the game to say that, though. You probably wanted to yell it while I was on the
Yeah, just no
mound."
filter with him, right?
No filter ever.
Tell me about that though. When you would watch him go on the mound and do what he did last season, go on to earn all WCL honors and be just him and Jaden Williamson, the most important arms for us out of the
For
bullpen. Did
sure.
that almost make you more glad because you're like, okay, this guy can goof off, but he takes it so seriously. When he's on the mound, he's ready to go.
For sure. What I actually really like is him and Jaden couldn't be more opposite dudes. They're like, just complete opposite attitudes about baseball, whatnot. Just two lights out
Oh my
closers.
gosh.
Like, a blessing to have both. But I think it was a perfect balance for those two. They're both really good, so
That's one of those things, you're talking to these people and you're like, wow, this guy is a absolutely devastating arm out of the bullpen. With the pitches he can throw, the velocity, the movement on his stuff. And you have a conversation with them sometimes, and it's like you wouldn't
like
think that initially sometimes because they're just so much more lighthearted with
for
everything.
sure. I mean, people always say pitchers have a screw loose, and it can be in a lot of different ways. For those two, it was a lot of different ways. Yeah, Canfield especially, though. I mean, you've seen him for 2 summers now. Excellent off speed. He kind of reformed his mechanics a little bit this last summer, and he was super efficient, and it was enjoyable to watch every game.
I think he was even better. I mean, the stats were a little different. He had a few more runs that scored in 2022 that were unearned, or they were earned, no, unearned runs. He had a few more earned runs given up in 2023. I thought he was even better. Forget the numbers. Just look at him every time he toed the rubber.
The numbers don't always speak the truth. I think he was just a guy you could go to every time you just took a lead or the game was close. The numbers don't mean that much to me. It's who you can trust with the rock, and I'd take him and Jaden almost every single game in that situation.
Absolutely. We talked about what they are like on days they would pitch. You're a little different. You're a little more lighthearted on days you pitch. I remember that first start you had in 2022, and I was surprised to see, hey, there you were out during batting practice, helping out Mitch with the fungos. Tell me how you stay ready on days you're pitching, because there's a difference between being, a little too tense, working yourself up too much, but also being too relaxed. And you've kind of found that in between.
I don't understand the whole "it's my start day, isolate myself from the team" that some guys do. It's like, you're just another player. It's just your turn to pitch. So it's like, You're going to psych yourself out by sitting in the clubhouse for an hour. Or you're just going to go chop it up with the guys who are about to play defense for you, man. Maybe you make them laugh once and they might make a good play for you. I don't know. So I just never understood isolating yourself. I don't wear headphones when I warm up, none of that stuff. It's just keeping the same mentality every day and preparing the same way, regardless of what game it is or what situation it is. And it becomes easier and more repetitive after that.
It's so funny because I've only seen two guys with the Apple Sox. And this will be I joined the team in 2018. I've only seen two guys who were so relaxed on their days, and they were out in BP. It was you, and it was Seth Kuykendall, another NWAC arm who was with Yakima Valley, joined us 2019, lights out. He's out there dancing around on the field during BP, helping out with the fungos, and it worked out pretty well for him, too. It's just. I crack up sometimes when I think of that because you guys are the only two I've really seen be that way. But the norm is for guys to kind of lock themselves in the locker room, put on the headphones, and no one look at me right now.
Man, you gotta get the energy up. It's your turn to pitch. You've been waiting all week.
And you're a guy who pitches with fire. You've got emotion on the mound. Once the game begins, you've got that energy going. And what's a way that you use that to you harness that energy over the course of a start? Because we see it sometimes, guys will get too into it sometimes, and then that's kind of where you can lose yourself a bit.
Yeah, I've noticed, when I come out flat, obviously I don't throw as hard as every other guy in the league or most other left-handers, even for that. So trying to find an edge in situations, pitchers a lot of times take pitches off in their outings. My focus is trying to not take a single pitch off every time I'm in the game. That's just when bad things happen. That's when doubles happen. That's when missed spots happen. And when you don't, throw 90 plus or have crazy movement on pitches, you can't afford that in outings. So trying to stay locked in, and that's one way I do it, is just trying to pitch with a little bit of fire, a little bit of focus every time.
It's so cliche to say it with guys who use a lot of off speed, but you're kind of a crafty lefty in that sense. I kind of cringe even saying the phrase because it's overused, frankly. But I'm looking back. I remember I asked guys last year to tell me what their pitch types were. I'm looking at you. This was before the summer of 2023. Four seam fastball, 12-6 curve, slider, change, splitter. Take me through those options. I mean, which ones are you're using heavily? Which ones are you saying, okay, this is kind of maybe I'll throw that in there occasionally.
Yeah, when I'm really amped up, I like to feel like I throw 90. So then we just throw the four seam fastball a lot. But that's not always the case.
Playoff game went at you, right? That's when you like that one.
To lefties, a lot of the 12-6 changes eyesights, the slider, mid to late counts. I mean, we can't give it all away here, but mid to
No, we
late
don't want
counts,
that.
righties also don't like sliders. And then the changeup has become a really good pitch for me. And then late game, after I've been a couple times through the order, the split just becomes a handy tool because guys just don't see it the whole game, and then there it is. And usually it's a good enough pitch for a bad barrel or something in the dirt, 0-2, 1-2.
This will be the third straight summer where when you make your eight, nine, maybe 10 starts, however many you're hopefully able to make, that I'll mention in the first inning, those pitch types, and I'll say the 12-6 curveball. Explain it to the fans who don't understand what that might necessarily mean because they hear curveball and they go, okay, simple enough. What is a 12-6 curveball, though?
Yeah, it has a lot more horizontal movement compared to the slider, which is lateral. It has about a 6 mile per hour speed difference for me. A lot of other pitchers similar to the slider is just a harder pitch. You throw it harder. 12-6, it just kind of drops in there straight down. It's a pitch hitters don't like to swing at early in counts because it starts up. So usually they'll take it. You can steal a strike with that a lot. And then when you get two strikes and they're trying to choke up and protect because they don't want to strike out, that's just how hitters are. They get all defensive. You can usually throw it down, sometimes in the dirt or out of the zone, and they'll chase on it compared to a slider, which is more on the same plane as a fastball. It just has a lot more cut movement, sliding movement. I guess the big leaguers are referring to it as a sweeper now. It's pretty similar.
I was wondering that ahead of this season because, like I said, I always ask guys, hey, what are your pitch types? What can I look for so I can say that that's what you're throwing when you do it? And I'm wondering if this is the year the guys will go, yeah, I've got a sweeper, which is kind of what we used to call the slurve, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a little more velocity now, though.
Nah, I don't dig it too much. I'm old school. I'll just ride with the slider and the 12-6. This whole sweeper movement. Otani can say that, but I don't think anybody else can. Nobody's throwing a 91-mile-an-hour sweeper. So you throw it like him, you can just call it a slider.
Oh, yeah. I would say there's still a considerable velocity difference unless you're at that level. But it's definitely a different level as a whole. Let's talk about some of the other guys you're going to be playing with again this summer. Some other returners. Fred Buxton will be back. He's on a 10-day contract again. But, you know, 2 years you've been able to bring a guy from Vanguard with you. And I remember last year Mitch was crediting you. He said this was a guy Quincy was on me like, hey, let's bring Fred to the Sox and we're going to do it again.
Yeah, Fred is just a guy who plays gritty baseball every day. I've never heard the guy complain a single time. He's going to give you tough outs. He's going to make exceptional plays. And I thought that he fit in with Mitch's culture in a sense that he wants to show up and play physical baseball every day, and that's just Fred. Fred's one of our best guys here at Vanguard. He was at Bellevue before. This is our fifth season together, which is pretty phenomenal. I don't think a lot of guys get to say that in college, but sharing the field with him every day is super special too.
And not just, you know, the 5 years between two colleges, but a summer baseball team for two seasons as well. I mean, have you played with anyone more in college than you have with Fred Buxton?
No, same amount with Jacob Dahlstrom. Brought him last summer.
That's right, yeah.
Both from Bellevue. I don't think anybody can say what I could say. I've played with Corey my entire life, who's one of my roommates, and the other two I've played all five college seasons with, and summer baseball. It's like, it's a blessing. We all live under same roof and go to the same school, so that's pretty sweet.
No, that's so cool. You get that opportunity too. I mean, it's the beauty of the game, right? And you know, you get those opportunities to
absolutely
build friendships, but then continue to expand on them over time as well. Yeah.
Baseball, I've noticed over the years, you can make some crazy connections just by knowing guys are playing with them a couple of times. It's guys they know and guys they know, and next thing you have new teammates and they know this guy. It actually helps guys kind of break the ice early in the summer too. Like, hey, have you played with this guy? Yeah, you know this guy. And it's just kind of how baseball works. Play so many games, you see so many faces.
Who are some other guys that you're looking forward to playing with again with the Apple Sox? Guys who have you been texting them at all, being like, we mentioned Canfield already.
Yeah. I haven't heard much besides Canfield. I was actually banking on the roster drop on Instagram here soon to see who's coming back.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you knew some already. So, because we're going to be starting those here, obviously, at the time that this is released. They'll have already begun, but
okay.
So that's exciting. I didn't realize how many players learned from us then too, who they're going to be playing with.
Oh, I checked the updates. We don't get to know. There's, you know, a lot of guys give a maybe or whatnot. So I don't bank on anything, and I just check the updates. I'm like, oh, sweet. And then you know, we'll see a post, and then I'll text the guy and be like, here we go again.
The cool thing with under Mitch is that most of the guys we posted have ended up playing for us last season, especially. We hardly had any dropouts, and it's common year to year. You know this too. You know, you sign a contract, things fall through. That's what I was explaining to fans. Like, if we posted about them at the time that we posted, they were signed to play for us. It just may not have worked out for some injuries, or coach shuts them down because they pitch more than they thought too. But you told me one time last year, you said that you treat the summer season almost as almost equivalent, or maybe right out there with your spring season. That's not always the case for guys, but tell me why it feels that way. I know we mentioned before, you know, you're pitching at home and everything, and you get to pitch, you know, in front of family and friends, but is there anything else with that really makes it feel that way for you? Or is it just, you know, like we said, the home connection?
It's a little bit of that. It's a mix with that. And it's just the way the game is played. There's a lot of guys in the West Coast League that want to play at the next level, that want to get drafted. And to think that there aren't, you know, coaches, scouts, stuff like that watching in the summer compared to school ball, or that it isn't as important, is kind of a joke in my eyes to think that way. And I think almost more because there's a lot of recruitments, there's a lot of junior college players that come in to the summers and they're trying to look for their next school, or guys that are transferring. I'm like, you should be playing harder than in your school season. You in school, you already know where you're at.
Yeah.
You already know where you're going to school in the summer. You know, you should be playing just kind of balls to the wall every day, because you don't know what it's going to look like next year. And for guys that don't play as much at school and you come play summer because your coaches sent you there, you better play even harder if you want to get playing time the next year. College it's kind of a cutthroat thing for baseball because there's 40, 50 guys on every team. Our roster has 54 guys at Vanguard. Only 9 guys can play. We got 24 rostered pitchers. Only one can throw at a time. You go into the summer, you throw 30, 40 good innings. You think coach isn't going to give you an eye the next year? So it all ties together. I think it's just as important for sure.
For me, it's interesting to look at guys who sometimes they come into summer, and like you said, maybe they're not as enthusiastic. And sometimes you look at their stats later and you go, you know, that was kind of the peak of your career. Like, no offense, yeah. But sometimes that's, you know, you thought maybe you were going further. That was kind of as high as you got. And then there's other guys where, you know, they come in, they're excited, and they do get that role. And it's a similar thing where it's, wow, you know, it didn't work out for you at college, but coming to the Apple Sox or coming to a summer ball program, that was, you know, that was a really good moment for you in your career, and you really understood that opportunity that it presented.
Absolutely. We can make an example of this. A stepping stool I could think of, three guys, Enzo Apodaca, Joichiro Oyama, and Matt Hallbeck. We can talk about seasons they had for the Sox, right, in the West Coast League. Pretty good. Matt was a guy I didn't know anything about. I'd never heard of him. He showed up, and he balled out for us.
Yeah.
All three of those guys go to the Cape, which is the number one summer league, which is the number one summer league in the United States. Mm-hmm. And all three of those guys, I think, made all
Cape Cod League.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah.
And Joichiro co-MVP. So if you think people aren't watching, you have a good season, and you don't know where you're going to be. You know, all three of those guys balled out for us, and people were watching, and they end up in the Cape. So.
That was
for the young guys, there you go.
That was so cool. And the thing, you said it, Matt Hallbeck, he got some action his freshman year. He was our best hitter. Joichiro was the best player at getting on base. Matt Hallbeck was our best hitter in 2022. I still stand by that.
Yeah.
And those two somehow end up on the same team again, which was just amazing to me. And they were with the Orleans Firebirds. I remember thinking, these guys have no clue who they just picked up from the Apple Sox from summer.
The chemistry they're rolling with. Yeah. I just remember every time Matt hit the dish and there was a runner in scoring position, I'm like, he's going to find a way to score this game. Like every single time. I had full confidence in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had full confidence in Joichiro finding a way to get on base every single time. So it's always nice to have two guys like that on the team. And I mean, there wasn't an inch of ground Enzo couldn't cover. So all three of those guys, that was well-deserved, and I was super happy to see that for them last summer, having a successful season in the Cape. That's kind of the dream for a lot of college baseball players.
Let's get them all drafted this year. That's my hope this summer is we're talking about Enzo Apodaca, Matt Hallbeck, and Joichiro Oyama all getting drafted because they all deserve it.
Yeah, that's three jerseys I'm getting right there.
Absolutely. I keep telling people, I said, they go to my Pirates. I'm absolutely buying that jersey as soon as I can. So, it's fun to see the way guys evolve. It's so fun to follow guys in the spring too. For me, it's such a fun mix right now of, you know, who have we got coming in? Who have we seen before? And I got to tell you, when last spring began and Grant Sherrod was hitting the cover off the baseball in 2023, I started going, wait a sec, where the heck was this in the summer with the Apple Sox?
Oh, man. It was for some guys, you know, it can be the opposite. The summer can be a stepping stone or a waking point. Another shout out, Mason Philly, man. He had his moments in the summer for us. He was good. And then he had some struggling times. And he goes home, starts working on some things. Next thing you know, he's like mid nines, takes the strikeout record for University of Arkansas Monticello. And he's just a straight dude, pitcher of the year for their conference. I'm not saying it's because of what happened in the Apple Sox, but I mean,
stepping stone.
You see these guys come through. It's just another stepping stone. You don't know where they would have been if they never would have came. So,
no doubt about it. For me, if you're in the West Coast leagues, in the West Coast League, it's kind of that. It's that crossroad. It's if you can dominate this league, if you can do what you need to do here and learn, you can potentially make that next step. And like we talked about, we've seen a lot of guys do that, and it's been so fun to do that here these last couple of seasons. But I wanted to shift gears. I wanted to shift gears here. I want to talk to you about something I really enjoyed from last season. This was on the night of the Fan Fest. Remember, we did that mic'd up video at the beginning of the season. Was that as fun for you as it was for me, both in the moment filming that and then cutting up the clips later on? Did you enjoy being mic'd up that day? Because you sure seemed to really soak it in.
Yeah, it was kind of an easy icebreaker for me to go around and talk to all the new guys and all the younger guys. It was really fun. We got a lot of laughs in there, but it was a little edgy trying not to, you know, say something or do something you can't do on social media. But having Canfield around, I'm always looking over my shoulder like, what's he gonna do? I got the mic on, man. Try not to eat a baseball off the mic, stuff like that. But it was fun for sure.
I remember I was able to get a couple TikToks out of that. And I remember one of them was you just asking guys, where are you from? What do you like about Wenatchee? From here, the mountains. And we were just counting. You and I are like, oh, they're
over
from mountains.
Mountain count. I'm like, all right, it's fair.
Just kept going up. And I remember the other one was when you were talking with Mitch about, oh, can we get some, can I get some pitcher at bats this year? And Mitch obviously shot that one down.
Yeah, nah. No go.
I remember
we need one. I'm requesting one this year.
I remember when Jack Moffitt got in town, and I remember he was mic'd up. I had him mic'd up on a practice day, and he was like, "Well, Coach Darlington's different this year. He's ready to win now.
He's more serious." Team. Oh no.
It was so funny doing that. And I remember I wanted to do a third one. I wanted to mic up Canfield. And he was like, Joe, I don't know. Not about me. And then I remember MJ Sweeney was running in. And I was like, what do you think about MJ? He goes, hey, MJ. He runs in. He goes, just kind of give him a serious look. And Evan was like, I can't even do it seriously. He goes, do you want to be mic'd up today? And I was like, what do you mean? You're not deciding this. I am.
So you can't pick the guy?
And MJ's like, oh, really, Evan? And Candy's like, yeah, what do you think? He said, yeah. I was like, I've never seen Canfield.
Anybody but him.
Yeah. I was like, I've never seen Canfield switch from something just joking to, hey, you know, I'm taking charge of this right now. What do you think, MJ?
That's pretty funny.
Tell me what you're looking forward to about working with Coach Cali again this season. Mike was in his first season as a summer ball pitching coach in the West Coast League, his second overall. But he really fit into the team dynamic immediately. And sometimes those coaches, it's tricky because more often than not, and it's certainly the case with the Apple Sox, you're all coming from different situations. For Mitch, it's go time. This is my baseball season. Let's go. Let's run and gun. Mike was coming off of winning the NWAC championship. And maybe that was the best thing that could have happened because he brought that energy right into the summer. And he seemed to leave a mark on a lot of you guys.
Yeah, he fits super well with Mitch. He's another, you know, player coach I would consider. He has a lot of pitching experience under his belt, and he's super relatable to the young guys. He brought some good arms with him from LC, Joey, and Aiden, like just good dudes to have around, good dudes for the staff. He helped me out a lot. Something I wasn't expecting right away, busting down mechanics. He's another guy, just gritty every single day. Helping dudes with pens, pregame, stuff like that. He's an awesome coach, good guy to be around. Always has an answer when you have a question when it comes to pitching stuff, which is important.
And that's another guy who he's got to be, what, 2 or 3 years older than you, if that? I mean, he's right about
I think
there.
Two, yeah.
Is that kind of
two,
nice?
And his pitching knowledge is, I mean, I think far greater than mine, and it's just super helpful to have around. It's nice to be able to have a conversation and get some points across, like both ways, what we think, what he thinks I could do better. It's super helpful.
He was such a huge addition, and we're so excited about that, him coming back again this season. And let's talk about this 2024 season. If the goal obviously last year was let's go win a title. Now it's the same thing. It's going to be tough to replicate what happened last season, but that doesn't mean the goal has changed. How much is this something that you know you're thinking about? You're going to talk about with guys like, let's go do it this year because you don't know how many opportunities you're going to get. And for you, this is the last summer.
For sure. The goal hasn't changed. I do want to win a title. I know Mitch wants to. The culture is set from day one. The returners, I know, will do a good job of making sure that. And I think an awesome addition having Xander in the dugout. Because he knows what it was like when we went on that second half run. He knows the culture. So having his experience in the dugout is going to be super helpful. Another player coach, And I think those guys as coaches are super underrated because they're more relatable to the players and it's super helpful.
Tell me about Xander. I almost even forgot about him because that's a guy you played with the Apple Sox 2 years ago.
Yeah.
How weird is that for you that, hey, wait a second, that guy's switching up his gear now. He's not putting on the jersey anymore.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be too weird. He was a year or two older than me, but just another good guy to have in the dugout. Him and Joe got along so well, both playing infield. He was a great stick. I know he's going to have a lot to offer to the hitters, especially the young guys who just soak up knowledge. That's what they do in the summers. I think he's going to embrace it really well and just be a good addition to the coaching staff for sure.
So I was doing the math the other day. I was looking at it because I was wondering where you ranked in this category. I haven't gotten a full look at all your stats, but I was impressed when I saw your 87 strikeouts are the most in the West Coast League since the start of the 2022 season. That's really cool on its own. Now, this is the part. I remember texting this to Mitch and Mike, actually. You are 24 strikeouts away from becoming the Apple Sox all-time leader. You'd be looking to pass Hunter Boyd, who's got 110 from the 2017 and 2018 seasons. Now that I've said that, is that something you're kind of like, hey, that would be really, really cool to accomplish this year?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing to kind of chase this summer. I want to do it early.
Yeah.
I think it's achievable.
Eight punchies in the first three outings, right? Just eight each game.
Right away. We'll have it by July.
Exactly.
No, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool thing to hear. Just grateful for the opportunities because without, you know, Mitch taking the leap that first year for that first start, I don't know if it would have ever happened, would have ever got as many innings or opportunities. So it's just important to enjoy each start as they come.
You've been, just from based on our conversations in the past couple of seasons, you seem like someone you really enjoy the Apple Sox history aspect. That's why I wanted to bring that up, was because I knew that was something that you seem to have enjoyed. You know, tell me about that, because a lot of guys come in and, you know, they don't know much for the team. The team could have started that day for all they know, but tell me what you enjoy about the history of the team in that sense, because it is a really rich history. And, you know, you, Mitch, and a lot of these other guys, Mike, Xander, you're in the midst of trying to add a chapter to this team's history this season.
Yeah. I mean, it all just ties back when I was a kid going to the camps. Back then, pitching coach was named Coach Hippie. He was a fun guy to be around. It was just going to the games as a kid and just wanting to be out there. And then the older you get, you're like, wow, this could be a reality. I actually signed a contract when Ian Sanderson was the coach to play. And then that same week was when I had the injury, which was kind of sad because I was looking forward to that summer, especially as a freshman, not getting a ton of innings in college. But being able to have the opportunity to come back and, you know, like you said, we did start a new chapter when Mitch became coach, and I think it's working out pretty well.
No doubt about that. And I'm glad you brought up the camps thing before when you had done those. I was thinking about it when I was having you on right before I sent you the Zoom link for this call. I was thinking, boy, tough act to follow. He's following up Ed Nags, but because he was the last guest on the podcast. Tell me about your memories doing the camps. I remember you had told me, and I think you told Dan Koontz with NCW Life last year, there was a specific time you remember hearing something from Coach Nags, and that kind of stuck with you.
Yeah. The saying, I remember at the end of the camp, it was a 2 day camp. He goes, you guys train hard, you keep practicing, this could be you one day. And then, you know, I don't remember the faces or any of them, but there's five or six Apple Sox guys, you know, maybe they didn't even want to be out there. But as a kid, you look at those guys, you're like, these guys are the greatest, you know, they like, these guys are awesome. And, you know, I was like, maybe this could be you one day. And so, I mean, even when we do the camps now, I think about that, like being in the kids' shoes, like they want to play baseball. They enjoy the game. You got to give them a good experience when they come to the camps because you never know what it'll mean to them.
How fun has that been, kind of switching roles from something you're done? You've done it before. You've been on that field in their shoes before. Now you're the one kind of shaping what they're doing. It's got to be kind of a surreal moment for you.
Yeah, for sure. It is surreal. It's more like an opportunity to give back and try to give the kids the same experience I had when I was younger in the local area. I mean, there was a group last year, kind of touched my heart a little bit. There were 7 or 8 Brewster kids that drove up to come to the camp, kids from Chelan. So it's just cool to see that, and then kind of the next generation of kids playing baseball. It's just fun to see.
That's really cool. I got to go back to this one. I wanted to ask you about some of the stuff you, when you're pitching or when you're in the dugout, what's the kind of food you like to have on you? Because people who may have watched that mic'd up video may remember one of the things you had, can we say invented? You called them Spittles. What was it?
Yeah.
Skittles and sunflower seeds. Was it?
Yeah.
Explain that to people.
Dill pickle specifically. So
okay.
We go 3 bags of Skittles straight into the bag, shake it up. You can ask Xander, man. I put him onto that, and
yeah,
he
too.
Loved Ponce too. They'd be coming in off defense on my off days. Hey, let me get some of that. So I just make 2 bags because I know they're going to eat one. But that's like the all-time snack right there. I got to share a Canfield every day too. I might as well make 3 bags.
You got to copyright and get your face on the bag, you know, and start
Spittles.
selling those.
I mean, they're pretty tasty. I'll give you some this summer. I still have them today. I got them in my bag right over there.
Oh, that's fun. I was going to ask if that's
Yeah.
something you do like all year round too. I do
Yeah.
I love the dill pickle seeds. I chew those all the time. I have a pack
Yeah.
in my office. I work in hockey, you know, in our rink. I'll be sitting there. I chew those seeds. But I don't know, like, is it regular Skittles? Is it sour Skittles that you do with the pickle seeds?
Just regular.
Regular?
I think sour would overtake
That'd be a lot.
the flavor. So we just go with regular. And then the guys are like experimenting with other things. And we always just end back with the Skittles, you know, and it's just a staple now. The Apple Sox staple.
I remember the reaction Cade Westerlund had. You know, 10-day guy, he had a big impact on the team early on last year. I
Yeah.
remember him being like, whoa, that's different. And he kept coming back for more.
Yeah. First time he tried it, he comes up, he goes, I think you did something here. I think you did something here. And I'm like, right? Right?
Yeah.
How is everyone not liking this?
How did that start? Was that an Apple Sox thing? Was that, you know, high school? Was that Bellevue, Vanguard? Where did you start that?
That was in like high school. Me and Connor Ashworth, he had Skittles and I had seeds, something like that. And you put both in your mouth at the same time, accidentally, who knows? You're like, whoa, it tastes kind of good. Then we started mixing it. And I mean, we've been doing it for years now.
Yeah. I had never had the pickle seeds until recently. I get the, I'm blanking on the brand now, but we were on a road trip and we stopped at a gas station, which any team of college age players, you stop at a gas station on the road, that's the highlight of the trip, right? But,
Oh, for sure.
but so
For
we're
sure.
stopped at a gas station. I was like, I kind of want to get some seeds. I'm kind of feeling that. And one of our goaltenders was telling me, he's like, get the pickle ones. Those are a game changer. I had that and I was like, whoa, I
Yeah.
cannot convince her there's a better flavor of
No.
sunflower seeds besides those.
Never
But
get tired of the pickle ones.
so
For sure.
as we kind of wind down here, we talked about just about everything too, Quincy. Tell me about, you know, what's your message to the fans for this coming season? You know, like we said, you're a familiar face. You're kind of in that leadership type role heading for this team. What's your message to someone who, you know, they're coming out, they're going to come to some games this summer, and they're looking forward to seeing this team?
Just be ready to see some exciting baseball. I think a lot of guys take a big leap coming to Wenatchee. Like I said, there's a lot of out-of-state guys. Just the fans being there and cheering them on, I think especially at home games, really relaxes them, allows them to play their best game. So the more people there, the better. We love seeing you guys at the field. We love when the seats are full. It makes for an exciting summer. We love the support.
Last question I'll ask you, what's your favorite game you've been a part of with the Apple Sox? You can answer that two ways. It could be a game you pitched in, it could be a game you watched, unless both are the same. Because for me, there's two games, I think, for different reasons that you probably, well, probably three, I guess. We talked about one, the game, your first start with the Apple Sox, where you struck out 8-6 scoreless against Port Angeles. The second one I think of is game 2 of the 22 division series against Kamloops. The third one, obviously not the outing you would have wanted, but starting the home opener to begin 2023. I could be
Yeah.
wrong. I don't know if there's any others in there that maybe stand out for you too.
I'm going to go with the second one. Just
playoff game.
The way Connor followed up
the
in
first one.
That game. Oh, the first one, sorry.
Yeah.
The way he followed up in that game kind of just put a stamp on it. Like, it was just such an awesome thing to see, especially, you know, you go down to the pen after you're done, you come back in the dugout ready to cheer on the next guy, and then he just dominates for three straight innings, just left no doubt. That was just one of the funnest baseball games I've been a part of, for sure.
Absolutely. That was an incredible night. We get so few pitching duels over the course of a summer that when you get one, you really treasure it as well. Well, Quincy, this was a ton of fun. And I said this to Ed when I talked with him about a month ago. I said, boy, we could probably go another hour. But for the sake of the listeners, for the sake of you having a normal night, we really appreciate your time here. Really looking forward to May 31st when we get to see the team take the field again. Thank you for the time.
For sure. Thanks, Joel.
Make sure to tune in next week for a full breakdown of the 10 returning players who are going to be coming back to the Apple Sox in the summer of 2024. The head coach, Mitch Darlington, is going to talk with me about those guys, what they bring to the team, and his excitement about having all of them back. Please subscribe to our podcast if you do not already, and if you do enjoy listening to it, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you might be listening, whether Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or elsewhere. I'm Joel Norman. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Apple Sox Podcast.